A morning, today's daf in Chulin Kuf Chaf Aleph 121. We are on Kuf Chaf Amud Beis, and the discussion that we're currently involved in the Gemara is a discussion of what exactly is the status of solid foods that were converted into liquids, and I consume or I drink the liquid form of solid foods. Would one be liable for that, yes or no? And again, I'm going to go back to a point that we made yesterday, and that is, generally speaking, eating and drinking are generally put under one category. Tosfos made this point yesterday. Tosfos on Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph already says, Vim Tomar, third line, third Tosfos down. I didn't read the Tosfos inside yesterday, but I basically said over the gist of Tosfos. Tosfos writes, Vim Tomar V'lam Likra Hashtiya Havi Bechla Achila. Generally speaking, we're talking about eating and drinking, so it's one general category. And eating and drinking are generally not synonymous terms, but fall under the same basic idea. Right, the Gemara over there talks about how the drinking of wine falls is subsumed under the category of achila, consumption. Right, that's the best English word that we have to describe that. In terms of consumption, is both eating and drinking. So v'yeshlam medasim b'mila d'shtiya kigon yain v'shemen v'achah b'mila d'avra achila d'memachlu v'shasilhu. And so basically what Tosfos says, and not totally clear that the precise understanding of Tosfos, but basically we're talking about things in its natural state, meaning we're talking about foods that are generally eaten and consumed and are in a solid form, and I convert them into a liquid. Okay. So what were the topics that came up in yesterday's daf? So on Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph, so the topics that we talked about were chalev, chametz, and nivlas of tahor. Right, chalev, the forbidden fats of an animal. Chametz, obviously, the leavened bread that you're not allowed to eat in Pesach. And the carcass of a kosher bird that was not shechted. So in those circumstances, the Mishnah says in all three of those, we know that if they were taken from the solid state and reduced into a liquid state, and it was done through heat, so under those circumstances, will you be chayav for eating them, even though you drank them? How do we know that in all three cases? So we have a drasha in each one of them. It's the same drasha, meaning not the same pasuk, but the same word. The Torah by each one of them uses the term nefesh, which means to say that as long as my soul is imbibing, so then I'm going to be liable. So it doesn't matter how my nefesh arrives at the point of consumption, whether I was eaten or whether it was drunk. It doesn't matter. One is going to be liable for both. Well, why isn't one of them going to be sufficient? Why do I need three different sources? So that was the Gemara's yesterday on Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph. And then the Gemara pointed out that we also have another area in Halacha where if I take something in a solid form and I reduce it to a liquid form, I'm going to be liable, and that's by sherets. If I drink bug juice, and not the bug juice that we had in camp, but literally, the juice that has come out of a bug, you squeeze the bug, and you eat the juice of it. So one is going to be liable for that. So how do I know that? So once again, that was the Gemara also bringing us another drasha as well. The Hatameim from actually this week's Parsha, so that's there to come teach us that one would be liable for such a case as well. Once I have the shrots, then why do I need the other drasha? So the Gemara also arrived at that conclusion as well, and that's where we got to. So we are now on Kuf Chaf Amud Beis at the top of the Amud, and so basically we have now four different areas in the Halacha where we all speak to this idea that eating a solid in its liquid state is going to be a violation, and we have now four different areas in Halacha. Okay, here comes the expansion package, as we are going to be discussing more. Veha detanya, Kuf Chaf Amud Beis, three lines from the top of the Amud. Hatevel, ve'achadash, ve'ahekdesh, ve'ashvias, ve'aklaim kulam mashkin ayotemehem kamosan. So here the Brisa says that if I have any one of these isurim, tevel is untithed produce. Chadash, any produce before the second day of Pesach. Any of this year's produce. Produce, by the way, meaning grain, to be more specific. Any one of the five grains of this year's crop before the second day of Pesach is usher through the isur of chadash. Hekdesh, anything which is dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. Shviz, any produce during the sabbatical year. Probably we're talking about after the Shas Biur, where it's going to be prohibited. And Kalaim, anything that you had a mixture of a vineyard together with other seeds as well. So, all these are prohibited foods, and Mashkan Hayotzemem Kamosam, and the liquids that come out of them as well are also going to be prohibited. So, mi nalan. Good. That's the brisa. Now, the question, well, how do I know that? V'chitem, l'gmar mehanach. So, the Gemara says, okay, so why don't we learn from any of the above. So malahanach shekein yisur haba me'elav have. So the Gemara says, okay, anything that we learned above, the three categories of chelev, chametz, and nivlas of tahor, and the category of shratzim, so those are all isurim where the isur is self-generated, meaning just by virtue of it is, creates the isur. On the other hand, however, in this list you have something where the isur is not internally generated, but rather the isur is created. Which one are we talking about in the list that we just mentioned above? So Rashi actually points to only one of the above. So which one of Tevel, Chadash, Hekdesh, Shviyas, Kalayim is going to be something where the Isser does not ba me'elav, but rather it is manufactured by human? And Rashi says Hekdesh. Hekdesh is something where the animal was Chulin, and then the person declared it to be Hekdesh, and so now with the person's sanctification, with his consecration, so now the animal is usser. I can't learn that out from any of the above, because all of the above are usser me'elav. Okay, good. So gamrinim bikorim. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to learn these out from a new source, and that's bikorim. So bikorim gufay minalan. Good, we're learning it from bikorim. So we have not yet discovered where exactly in the Torah does it say that by bikorim, if I take with solid state and reduce it to a liquid state, so I'm going to be violating the isser. By the way, bikurim is like truma. And just like truma cannot be eaten by non-kohanim, same thing with bikurim as well. But where's the source that tells me that moving it from solid to liquid is going to be a violation? Now, not the actual change of state, but the consumption after change of state. So, ditni Rabbi Yossi pri. Pri atamevi vi atamevi mashke. The Torah says in terms of the mitzvah of bikurim, you have to bring fruit. Me reishis kol peri. So it's got to be a fruit. Don't bring a liquid. Okay, good. So the lichatchila should not be bringing juice. But let's say I juice. Let's say I take the grape and I reduce it down to wine or grape juice or whatever. So minayin tamalam or tavi. So the Torah says tavi minim mikol makom. Asher tavi miartzecha. So, okay. So you brought it. You shouldn't have brought it down to a juice, but you did. Now, ikal mifrach mali bikurim. Sorry, period. He made the juice. Okay. So anyway, so the point is that you see that the Isser of Bikurim applies not only when it's in its solid form, but even after it's been moved to a liquid state. So the Gemara says, okay, Kalamifrach Mali Bikurim Shekentu in Kriya Vanacha. You want to learn out from Bikurim? So let's call this a Binyanav. You want to learn from Bikurim? You can't learn from Bikurim. Bikurim has got very special and unique halachas that you don't have elsewhere. So in order to use something as a precedent, so that which I'm learning towards has to share the same characteristics. Bikurim has got unusual halachas. Number one, the mitzvah of Kriya. When you bring the Bikurim into Yerushalayim, you have a parsha you have to read. So you don't have that by other halachas. You don't have it by Hekdesh. Also, Hanacha. There's a mitzvah by Bikurim to take the basket and put it on the Mizbeach. So that too is a unique halacha regarding Bikurim. You don't have this by other halachas. I can't learn from Bikurim. So Ela Gamar Mitruma. So the Gemara says, V'truma gufa minalan. Okay, so we'll learn from truma. And then, of course, the obvious follow-up question, where do I know that truma is going to be prohibited when I take it and move it from its solid state to a liquid state? The itkish lebikurim. So the Gemara says, we have a hekesh of bikurim and truma. Da'amar v'trumas yadcha. The Torah describes the trumas yadcha in Parshas Re'eh. Elu bikurim. So this is a reference to bikurim. So ma'ala truma shekein chayavna misa v'chomesh. So the Gemara says, okay, you're going to learn from Truma. You can't learn from Truma. Truma also has a Chumra. And that is Karen V'chomesh. That if a person inadvertently were to eat Truma, so he would have to make restitution. And the restitution would be that not only would he have to pay for its value of that which he consumed, but he also has to add a surcharge as well. Let's call it a Knas. And that is he has to add another 25%. So, and this halacha is not true as it relates to Hekdesh. So once again, so where do we stand right now? Elagamar mitarvayu, mitruma bikurim. So the Gemara says, okay, so we'll learn now through truma and bikurim. So the Gemara says, that's not going to help. Malu truma bikurim shekein chayav la misa v'chomesh. So again, how can I learn it from truma and bikurim? They both have these unique halachas where if they are to be eaten intentionally, so the consumer, and by a non-kohen, so that consumer is going to be chayav misa b'dei shamayim. And if they're eaten unintentionally, so the consumer is going to have to pay back not only its value, but a chomesh as well. So ela asya mi truma v'chad mehanach o mi bikur v'chad mehanach. So the Gemara says, okay, well done. So what we're going to do is we'll either learn from truma or from bikurim, and from anything of the above, chametz or nivlas of tahor. And so we're going to use a binyan av mishnei k'suvim, putting these two together, and basically through the common characteristics of these two, so we can introduce not only these two, but other things like it, notably hekdesh. Okay, I kind of takes us to the end of the sugya. We're almost done with this particular sugya. The Hadidnan, the Gemara now quotes a Mishnah from Trumos. Devash tamarim, v'yain tapuchim, v'chometz sit vanios, v'shar minei perishal truma. So we're basically talking about any fruit that's been converted into a liquid. Dates, so it was squeezed for its honey. And wine, basically you made some sort of cider out of it. Or you made some sort of vinegar out of it. So in any time that you take a fruit and reduce it down to a liquid, Rabbi Eliezer, Mechayev, Karen V'chamash, Rabbi Yeshua, Poter. So Rabbi Eliezer says that it still is Truma with all of its stringencies and with all of its liabilities. If a non-Kohen were to eat it, so there would be Karen V'chamash. You'd have to pay the principal and you'd have to add on another 25% if you ate it B'shogeg. And Rabbi Yeshua says no. Rabbi Yeshua says you're going to be Poter. So Bemai Pligi. So the Gemara says, okay. Now what... Of course, it goes without saying that it's usher. In other words, but it doesn't have the full chomer of truma. Good. So the Gemara says, so what is that issue over here? So the Gemara brings down, b'domina mina, v'domina v'uka basra kemiflegi. So the Gemara says, okay. So what is that issue over here is basically, look, how do we know that when it comes to truma, taking something from a solid and moving it to a liquid, how do we know that that's going to still have its full effect? So we learned it out. We learned it out through one of the midos. And now when I'm learning through a midah, let's say binyanav, let's say gzereshava. So when I'm learning from A to B, so what do we say? Don mina umina, or the other possibility is don mina v'uka basra. Now, don mina umina, we've gone over this numerous times throughout Shas, basically means like this. When I'm learning from A to B, whatever's true by A is going to be true by B. I doesn't contextually fit in B, it doesn't matter. In other words, the halacha by A is going to be transposed and moved over to B, period. Don mina, judge it from here, umina, and just keep going and push it through. And even though it doesn't particularly contextually fit, it's fine. On the other hand, don mina v'uka basra tells me that we'll take the din, we'll take the halacha, we'll move it over to B, to wherever we're learning it towards, but uka basra. But make sure that it fits in contextually to what we are describing and what we are discussing. Rashi over here, it's a very basic Rashi in terms of this idea of domina mina. Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi. Bechol gzereshav is a binyan av shebetor she'anu lemeidim davar mechavero I daininan le v'gamina le lechol mili o domina ma she'anu tzrichim lo v'uki besra le mili achrenaisa demefarshi begufe kemiflegi. So Rashi basically says exactly what we said, that if I say domina mina, I go all the way through. And I don't care where the halacha takes me. Domina vuka basra, meaning fit into contextually. Good. That's a nice abstract. Now let's see practically what that means in this particular case. Ma bikurin mashken ayotzem hem kamosam. I'm sorry. Let me go back one line. Rabbi Elazar of domina mina. Rabbi Elazar is of the opinion that when we make our limud, and by the way, interesting in the beginning of that Rashi says this will be true by Gzera Shavu, it'll be true by Binyanav. Meaning Rashi over here really broadens this principle of domina omina. So, domina omina, ma bikurim mashken ayotze mehem kamosam, af truma nami mashken ayotze mehem kamosam. Umina, ma bikurim afilu sharminim, af truma nami afilu sharminim. Good. So as far as Rabbi Elazar is concerned, so look, here's the halacha regarding bikurim. Any one of the bikurim, seven fruits, that are the first fruits of the season, so you're going to take them to Yerushalayim, and they're going to have the status of Bikurim. And so that's true regarding Bikurim. And not only is that true regarding Bikurim, but this particular halacha under discussion is that if I take it from a solid state and move it to a liquid state, it's still going to be Bikurim. So now I'm going to take this entire halacha, and I'm going to move it over to Truma. Av Trumanami Afilu Sharminim. Now, when it comes to Truma, so which fruits are really Chayiv and Truma Min HaTorah? So let's say the Gemara over like Rashi, right? Which fruits are chayv and truma min haTorah? Grapes and olives. And that's it. Those are your two fruits that are chayv and truma. But if that would be the case,
So then what would that mean, legabe, all other fruits? So legabe, all other fruits, so that min haTorah, there is no halach of truma. And nevertheless, according to Rabbi Eliezer, because of this principle of don mino mina, so that means to say, okay, so even though truma min haTorah is only limited to those two fruits, nevertheless, we're going to take the halacha and we're going to apply it to all fruits, even though the mitzvah of truma for all other fruits is only a din derabanan. So afilu sharminim. So that would be the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. That's why, go back to the brayisa, right? Devash tamarim, right? The honey of dates. Min haTorah, dates is not chayv and truma. And so I'm taking a date now, which is only chayv and truma midrabanan. I took it and moved it from a solid into a liquid. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, so you're going to be chayv for the non-Kohen to eat it in its liquid state. You're going to be chayv. Why? Don mina mina. Because we learned it from Bikurim. And Devash happens to be one of the fruits that are subject to Bikurim. And we're going to take the halacha and we're going to basically move it from Bikurim into Truma. And now Rabbi Yoshua Sever, Domina Ma Bikurim Mashkin Yotzim Em Kamosam Af Truma Mashkin Yotzim Em Kamosam. Now watch what happens with Rabbi Yoshua when we do the other method of Domina Vuka Basra. According to Rabbi Yoshua, we're going to take the halacha from Bikurim and we're going to bring it over to Truma, but we're going to contextualize it to Truma. Since Truma min haTorah only applies to olives and grapes, therefore, we're only going to limit the halacha to olives and grapes. Vuki basra, mamashkin dekachim, b'truma tirosh v'yitzar in, midi achrina lo, af mashkin, ayotze mehem, kemosam, tirosh v'yitzar in, midi achrina lo. So that means now that according to Rabbi Yeshua, since we're contextualizing, and since the halacha of Truma only applies to grapes and olives, and to no other fruit, so therefore, this halacha, that moving it from a solid to a liquid state is still going to be chayev, is only going to be limited to grapes and olives. Okay. Through the sugya, I've said very clearly that the halachas of truma only apply to grapes and olives. And not only did I say that, but much more importantly, the Gemara just said it. And the Gemara said it actually pretty clearly. It's very challenging to read the Gemara any other way than the way I just read it. That when it comes to truma, the only fruit that are chayev and truma are tirosh v'yitzar. Only grapes and olives, and wine and olive oil, but to no other fruits. This is difficult. The Rambam's of the opinion that the mitzvah of truma is on all fruit, not just grapes and olives, but all the fruits as well. That's the Rambam's opinion, and our Gemara certainly is going to be difficult to read if you are the Rambam. Or, just I'm flipping around the question, if you're the Rambam, how are you going to read our Gemara that we just read? Okay, so obviously that presents a challenge. That's not for us to solve for right now, but I brought it up.
So, min haTorah, if you have a table for grains, there's a no chiyuv to be mafresh truma.
Truma is a maestros. That's the pshuto shel our Gemara. Okay. V'haditnan ein sofkin es harabayim mishum arla ela al hayotze min hazesim. Okay, fine. V'haditnan, sorry. We learned the following Mishnah. We are on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Amud Beis, about six lines from the bottom. Make it five. We learned in the Mishnah, Ein Sof Kenes Arba'im Mishum Arla. When is one going to get Malkus for the consumption of Arla? Arla is a fruit that comes off the tree those first 3 years post-planting. That fruit that comes off the tree is Aser both Be'achila and also Be'hana'ah. And if one were to eat the fruit from that tree, one would be violating a law in the Torah and be subject, of course, to Malkus. So, ein sof kenes arba'im mishum arla, ela yotzei min hazesim umin ha'anavim. Now, over here, when is it true that you're going to be subject to malchus? When eating liquid arla, meaning a fruit that was juiced, and now you're eating the juice of that fruit of arla. So, you ate arla, but in its liquid state. According to this Mishnah, you are only going to be subject to malchus only by wine and olive oil, and that's it. So the Gemara says, because mani Rabbi Yoshua damar domina v'uka be'asra v'gamar lehu lebikurim mitruma. So the Gemara says, because this is subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yoshua, that even though there is a limud, and even though the limud is coming from bikurim, and even though bikurim apply to more than just two fruit, it applies to seven fruit, nevertheless, Don minav uka basra. And therefore, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be learning from bikurim from truma, but the but because it's only subject to wine and to olive oil, so therefore the malchus is only going to be for those two.
It's funny. Before we were learning truma from bikurim. Now you're learning bikurim from truma.
Yeah, it goes. Right, I have it mapped out over here. It goes from the halacha of bikurim is that mashkan ayotze mehem is kamosam to truma, which is mashkan ayotze mehem kamosam, which is only for, according to Rabbi Yeshua, only for olives and grapes. And then, as far as now bringing it to Arla in Achinami, we're going to only limit it to olives and grapes. Yeah. Rashi addresses your question. Rashi, if you want to see the Rashi inside, Rashi af truma nami. It's the next Rashi that from the other one that I read. She frishet beperus kegon tamarim of a tapuch and kevan de truma nohagis bepri af agav de eno nohagis bemashkin shalhem ala betir shviyitz bevad hanachmach mashkin kevan de miperus truma also harein kachuma v'hai domina mina lav dafka kamar. Rashi says that even though we're saying domina mina over here, don't take it super literally. Daha tamar v'tapuchim gufaya ain't truma sam in the Torah. Let me divrei sofrim. V'hachi hu dekamrin and kevin de bemida daraisa islan domina mina. V'havi truma tamarim daraisa havi gemir lemi bikurim lamashkin hayotzim and kamosam hachinami. Rabbanan bididu ke ain daraisa takun. So Rashi says over here, you are absolutely right. Meaning on a daraisa level, other fruit are not even categorized within truma. But once you say domina mina, and basically in theory, if the fruit were chayv min haTorah, so therefore on the rabbinic decree, we're also going to incorporate them as well. That's how Rashi addresses it. Okay, I'm sorry. V'gamalu bikur mitruma v'hadar ma'isil ala arla pre mi bikurim. And we're going to learn out arla from bikurim. Okay, adkan. All right, that takes us to the end of that sugya. We are now. That was the entirety of yesterday's daf. Dedicated to this topic of taking a food which is coming naturally in a solid form, moving it, changing it over to a liquid form, and what kind of liability would there be for changing it to a liquid form? And the topics that were covered in the course of that of yesterday's daf: chalev, chametz, nivlas of tahor, shratzim, hekdesh, and a whole bunch of other isurim coupled together with hekdesh as well. Truma, Bikurim, and Arla. So in all these Isurim, so if I take the solid, move into a liquid state, so there would be a liability, and it sounds like full liability, and by full liability, even Onshim as well. Meaning that's the last price that we learn, that we're talking even Malkus as well. Okay. Kuf Chaf Aleph Amin Aleph, and now we are up to number 4. You look at the Mishnah back in Kuf Yazayin Amin Beis, the opening Mishnah of the ninth parak of this Masechta. So we're now talking about things which are basically accessories to food, meaning not food itself, but something which accessorizes. Now, most of the things mentioned in the Mishnah are shomer. Now, as a shomer, something which is provides a protective layer to the food, so they are going to be a conduit of tumas ochlin. Again, the food itself, anything which is edible, is subject to tumas ochlin. And as long as there is heksher, as long as it now becomes first into contact with any one of the seven liquids, it now is susceptible to tumas ochlin, where if something tame were to make contact with it, it becomes tame, because it is a food. It's tumas ochlin. And these 8 items mentioned in our Mishnah are basically not food per se, but some sort of accessory to the food. So we already discussed at length the hide of the animal, which is clearly a shomer, the rotev of the animal, which we struggled in yesterday's daf to wrap our head around what exactly that is. It's not the fat, says the Baya, but rather the rotev was the gelled juice of the animal. Kippah, so kippah, we suggested yesterday that kippah is a reference to the dregs, pieces of dreg meat that's on the bottom of the pot. But again, Abaye dismissed that idea because that's a food. That's not accessory to a food. So we're talking about some spices which are not eaten in of themselves, but when put on the meat, basically complement the meat and are going to be eaten together with the meat, and therefore are going to be considered food legabi tumas ochlin, meaning it will be subject to tumas ochlin, and as we learned in the Mishnah, they're going to be mitzaref. meaning if the food by itself is not the requisite shear for Tumas Ochlin is a kabetza. So if I don't have enough of the food, but I have this in complement with the food to get me to the shear of the kabetza, that would be a shear now of a kabetza. And we're up to number four of the Mishnah. So we are now discussing the alal. So the alal is first and foremost a word that we rarely hear. It's right. We don't have familiarity with the word. I'll speak better for myself. I don't have familiarity with the word. So what does that word actually mean? Hard to say. But what is it? Meaning give us a definition. So the Gemara brings down a couple of opinions. So my alal, we are on the top of Kuch Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar Martika, Rabbi Yochanan describes as Martika. Now that helps everybody who speaks a good Aramaic. What about the rest of us who don't speak a good Aramaic? So Rashi over here writes Martika, Gid Hashedra that Savar Vuhu Rachav Vilavan Vikashama Od Vikorna So Yibel. So basically we're talking about some very hard sinews and tendons running up and down the neck of the animal. They're basically inedible. So right, Rashi describes them as kashama od. Okay, some really hard sinews. Reish Lakish Amar Basar Shepatasa Sakin. Reish Lakish says that we're talking about when you're flaying the animal. When you're flaying the animal, what's going to inevitably happen is that as good as the flayer as you are, there's going to be some pieces of meat that are going to be stuck on the hide. Now that he describes as being the alal. Right, Rashi, Kishemaf Shitan Esabahema, Pamim Shasakim Polate Minabasar, Eitzel Haor, Velo Chashiv. Now generally it's considered insignificant because what are you going to do? In other words, it's a scrap of meat connected to the hide. You basically gave up on that piece of meat. Okay. And so as a result of that, it's not just scraps, but scraps that you're basically have yeish over. Okay. These are the two opinions that are articulated amongst the Amoraim. Each one of them have their challenges. The Gemara goes in, points out the challenges of either of these approaches. Meisvei. Of course, the first starting point for a discussion is a pasuk in Eov. Okay, so in Eov, we have over here dialogue between Eov and his friends. Okay, I have not covered the Sefer from cover to cover. Embarrassed to say, but it's true. And the pasuk over here describes the dialogue. Right, I get to lean on Rashi over here because Rashi tells me, like, mi amar al mi, who's talking to whom? Good. So anyway, the pasuk says, v'ulam atem tofli sheker rofe alil kulchem. All right. So in this dialogue, in this conversation that's taking place, so we get to see the word alil being used. So now it'll give us a little help in terms of context and contextualizing what the word actually means. Rashi over here writes, v'ulam atem tofli sheker iov amar lechaverov. Mechavrei divrei sheker atem, v'davar she'ein bo refuah atem omrim lerefuah si. So basically, Eov accuses his friends of being useless. Worse than that, liars. And ein bo refuah atem omrim lerefuah si. Like you're telling me things that are going to be helpful and therapeutic, and they're not going to be helpful, and they're not going to be therapeutic. Good. Now, let's see if we can now plug that into the pasuk and understand what the words alil means. Sheker rofei alil kulchem. Bish lama lamanda amar martika hainu delav barifuahu. Now, if you're telling me, this is Eov now saying to his friends, you guys are advising me to eat the alil of the animal. You know it's going to be useless. It's not going to help. It's not even food. Now, according to Rav Yochanan, it works out very good. Because Rav Yochanan described the alil as the hard sinews of the neck. It's not food. So, and therefore, works out perfectly in the pasuk in Eov. Elamanda amar basar shepatas osakin barifuhu. But if we're talking about scraps of meat that are connected to the hide, so it's true that people, generally speaking, don't go and collect that meat. But it's meat. It's still food. And if you needed a protein, so that would qualify as a wonderful protein. So why is Eov telling his friends, you guys are liars? That's good. It's pretty good. So the Gemara says, Balal dekar dekolem alo pligi. So the Gemara says, look, there's alal of Tanakh. Good. So when you see the word alal in Tanakh, and please don't ask me, the other times in Tanakh we see the word alal. I can't help you. But when you see the word alal in Tanakh, we have no debate amongst the Amoraim exactly what it means. We know what it means. Meaning, we're going to go with the pshat of the inedible tendons, the inedible sinews of the animal. Good. We all agree. Ki pligi balal demasnisin. But when you see the word alal the Mishnah, so it doesn't necessarily conform to the same parish. And the Gemara in a number of places uses this idea that the Torah speaks in one format, But divrei chachamim, but the chachamim have their own language that they have amongst them. Now, of course, most of the time, the lashon chachamim are going to be mimicking and echoing that of the lashon Tanakh. But here we have an example where the Gemara clearly states, not necessarily, in Tanakh, Allah has one way to be understood. In Mishnayos, could be that there's another way to understand it. Tashma, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Alal HaMechun HaSim Yesh Ketzayis B'makam Echad Chayav Nalav. So, Rabbi Yehuda says that if I have enough Alal that is aggregated where you have a Ketzayis, so one is going to be Chayav for consuming it, meaning it is going to be a Nevela. And the whether you eat it, or Rashi says, or whether you come into contact with it, in other words, it's going to now have the status of Nevela with Tumas Nevela as well. Now, V'am Rav Huna V'shukan So. Now, Rav Huna qualifies over here is that you were mechanesit. Why do you have to be mechanesit? So Rashi over here speaks about the idea of achsheve, of machshava, which we're going to keep seeing again in today's daf repeatedly. Rashi writes achsheve. I'm sorry, v'hu shekan so de achsheve v'galidaita de labat lemikaro ava mechanes meela v'ayde tinokish lo b'meskaven lo polig Rav Yehuda de lahavin avela. Look, generally speaking, when you're flaying the animal, any meat that's stuck to the hide, you're basically you're miyayish. So over here, in order to lend significance to these scraps, so you have to gather them together in order to show that you are not miyash over them. Now, good. It's because it's not Oakland. Now, Bishlam Laman Damer Basra Shapalta Sosakin Hainu Dechika Kazai Mechayev. And so here, this works out beautifully for Reish Lakish. You totally understand it. We're talking about scraps of meat. Now, generally, they're meat connected to the hide, so you've generally given up on them. But if you have a clear indication that you have not given up on them, so then they could be subject to Tumas Nevela. And I get it. But if you are a proponent of Rav Yochanan, that we're talking about inedible sinews, I don't care how many inedible sinews you have. You can have a kezias of inedible sinews. It's still inedible. And it's not going to be subject to Tumas Nevela. So, once again, what are you talking about over here? Meaning there seems to be no room for Rav Yochanan's pshat. Once again, the Gemara defends. Aliba de Rav Yehuda l'pligi. So the Gemara says, look, as far as Rav Yehuda the Tana is concerned, so the Amoraim have no debate what Rav Yehuda's feelings are. Rav Yehuda, when he sees the word alal, he translates it as scraps of meat. That's clear. And there's no equivocation. Where do we equivocate? Ki pliga liba de Rabbanan. When the Tanakhama says the word alal, is he working with that same definition or maybe has a different definition? Rav Yochanan Amar Martika, Nami Mitzarif, Reish Lakish Amar Dafka Basar Shepaltasu Sakin, Ava Martika Lo Mitzarif. And so what Rav Yochanan is entertaining is that the Tanakhama not only disagrees with Rav Yehuda, but disagrees in terms of what alal actually is. He describes it as some hard sinew. And now, if you think about it, it's a really big chiddush according to Rav Yochanan. The Tanakhama is basically saying is that if I have a piece of meat from the neck of the animal together with its hard sinews, even though those hard sinews are really for the most part inedible, but nevertheless, though, since they are coupled and paired together with the food, so they're going to be mitzarif to get you to the shear of Tumas Ochlin. Okay. And Reish Lakish, by the way, disagrees. In other words, he says no. If it's inedible sinews, it's simply inedible, and it's not going to be mitzarif. It won't even contribute towards the kibetza of the food. Because it's a shomer. Because it's a shomer.
No, that's if it's not a shomer.
No. It has to be. It has to be a shomer. Otherwise, it's inedible, and it can't be subject to Tumas Ochlin. The bone only can work as a shomer. I made this point yesterday, but I think it's a really good point, right? Everything mentioned in the Mishnah is not the same. Meaning, the hide and the bones are certainly shomer. Like that part, we could say clearly. When we're talking about the juice, when we're talking about the spices. Those are clearly not shomer. They're also not yados as well. So again, I don't have the vocabulary. I made this point yesterday. The Gemara did not give me the vocabulary to tell me what they are categorically. But they are accessories to the food, and therefore they're going to contribute to the shear. That we could say for sure. Now the alal, according to Rav Yochanan, like, I'd be a little bit hard-pressed to tell you what it is. Meaning the hard sinews that are in the neck, that are next to the flesh of the animal. So is it a yad? Is it a shomer? I don't think so, but it's inedible. So if it's inedible, so then it's got to be some. Meaning, what is it categorically? So like your Right. So like you're hearing me say right now, I'm hard-pressed to tell you where it belongs categorically. I do know, however, it's mitzarif. That the Mishnah taught me. Why is it mitzarif? According to Rav Yochanan? Good. I don't have a good answer. Sorry. Yeah, Reish Lakish works out a lot better. Good. Hi, Basar Shapatos Sakin Hechidami. Ida Chashiv Alaa Filaban Peinav Shei Mitame. Vida Lo Chashiv Alaa Betulei Batle. So the Gemara says, look, these scraps of meat that are connected to the hide during the flaying process. I'm flailing trying to say the word. During the flaying process. So the Gemara says, can we try to clarify? You're flaying the animal, but you're thinking to yourself, look, I'm right now, I don't got a lot going on right now. This is pretty much the meat I have. I'm not giving up on any piece of meat. And if there is meat connected to that hide, I didn't give up hope on it. I'll go back there. I'm going to get that piece of meat. So then, of course, it's not an accessory towards ochel. It is ochel. And let's say that basically I'm okay, meaning I'm not going to go get those scraps of meat. Whatever's lost with the hide is lost with the hide. Fine. So then betule butle. So then at that point in time, you've totally negated it. And it's nothing. And it shouldn't even serve as an accessory. So where are we halachically in the sweet spot of A, not being a food, but B, still serving as some sort of accessory to the food so that it can contribute to the shear? Where are we? So Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Meisha, so the Gemara is going to give two positions in terms of where we are in the sweet spot. So one possibility is that the owner of this animal had machshava on some of the meat. Now exactly what that means, it gets a little bit tricky. I'll read the Rashi. Miksasu chishavala, I underlined the Rashi. I'll read it. V'lo pirish eziksas. So Rashi describes over here where basically you had in mind that you're going to eat some of the scraps connected to the hide, but you weren't clear about which part. Hilkach kebetza minei lamekabotuma dahalo chishav akulo. So, to say that it in of itself is food, where you didn't have a machshav on all of it. Avaki mitzarev bahadei shar ochle mitzarev hauksas machshava de ispe la'ashlumi she'ire. So your machshava, being that it was a tepid machshava, so your machshava at least can make this food not in of itself a food, but a tziruf for other food as well. That's the way Rashi says it. Admittedly, I don't fully understand it, but I read the Rashi, I translated the Rashi, so I did so far okay. I get a passing grade, but that's all. The other possibility of the Gemara is the following. Again, we're looking at where we are in the sweet spot of not being a food, but being a tziruf. The Gemara says, V'chanamar, miksaso paltaso chayo, miksaso paltaso sakin. Meaning, we do have scraps, but what do we have? We have some scraps that were taken off by another animal, and we have some scraps that you yourself cut off. Now, if you have scraps taken off by an animal, this animal is not a trefa. Rashi, I'm going to read the Rashi one more time. Paltaso chaya nashcha kelev. So what happened was is that the dog took a good bite of this animal. V'dildo manabaso letzad ha'or. V'achar king shachta. So then you had some flesh already, hide and flesh already, basically coming off of the animal. And then what you did is you shachta the animal. V'hifli gamasakin ode. And now as you flay the animal, some more hide with flesh came off. And ve'ein yedua eza man paltachai ve'eza sakin. And right now, as you have all these scraps of flesh together with the hide, you don't know which one you cut off, and you don't know which one was bitten off by the dog. Now, again, it's a little bit strange. Empirically, you can't see the difference between the two. The difference between flesh cut off with the knife versus flesh bitten by the dog. Admittedly, that part is a little bit strange just from a pragmatic standpoint. Right. Again, it speaks to the same idea that you had a machshava on one part, but not a machshava on another part, and so therefore, it in itself is not considered a food, but it would be mitzarif for other foods to make it a shear. Okay, tanan hasam. Okay, we are now discussing other things that are somewhere in the middle between food and non-food. The Mishnah in Taharos describes the following. Now, the Mishnah in Taharos. So the first perek of Taharos, not so long ago, we discussed the 13 specific halachas mentioned in the Mishnayos and Taharos that detail nivlas of tahor, the carcass of a dead bird. Again, it's unusual nature in which you're going to become tummy, not when you touch it, not when you carry it, but you're only going to be tummy when you ingest a kezias of the bird. And so, while on the topic, so you have to ingest not any part of the bird, but obviously consumable parts of the bird. What parts of the bird are we talking about? So the Mishnah over there in Taharos, we're up to the second Mishnah. Hachartom, the Hatzi Parnayim, Mitamim Mitamim Mitzarfin. So we're talking about the beak. And by the way, you want to see a fun Rashi on Chartom? Chartom, Rashi writes beak.
No,
okay, I know. Right, Rashi's talking French. I'm talking English. But the words. Okay, because fine. Anyway, the French speakers over here confirmed that beak in French is bec. Good. That's our French word of the day. So achartom v'atzi parnayim. So if we're talking about the beak or the talons of the bird, the claws of the bird, mitamim umitamim. So it's going to import toma, it's going to export toma, umitstarfin, and it's going to combine. Now over here, we seem to be talking about parts of the bird that are totally inedible. And the Gemara is basically going to wonder, what are we talking about? Chartom, eitz ba'amahu. You're talking about the beak? It's a hard piece of wood. Amar Rebbe Elazar, chartom tachton. So the Gemara says, we're talking about the lower beak, of course. To which the Gemara says, tachton nami eitz ba'amahu. Okay, and how did that help us? Amar papa tachton she'el yon. So we're talking about the lower part of the upper beak. Now, just, I don't know enough about birds to help you in terms of identifying which exact anatomical part of the bird are we talking about. However, I will say the following. The Gemara is clearly pointing to some portion of the beak that's softer in nature and can be rendered inedible. I'm sorry. And can be rendered edible. Okay.
Why don't you say it's a shomer.
Right, the Gemara is assuming. I mean, look, it's not. It's the Mishnah Taharos. It's not our Mishnah. Meaning, our Mishnah in context is clearly entertaining the idea of shomrim. The Gemara's assumption is that Mishnah Taharos is just talking about food. But okay, tziparnayim. So now we move on to the claws. Amar Rebbe Elazar, Malkum Hamuvlaim Bebasar. So we're talking about not the end of the claws, which once again are inedible. We're basically talking about where the claws and the and the foot of the animal, or the foot of the bird, are connected. Basically, cuticles. Again, I don't know enough about bird anatomy to tell exactly what we're talking about, but it's a softer portion. Karnayim. Now, what about the horns? Again, we're not talking about the ends of the horns, which obviously are totally inedible. We're talking about the part close to the skull of the animal. Once again, it's a little bit softer. It can be rendered edible. Kayotzebo hashochet behema. Okay, and here we go. We are now going to start a discussion about an animal becoming food before it can become an avela. And this takes us back to the Mishnah. Now, you remember the Mishnah. Admittedly, the Mishnah was really challenging. And we went through the Rashi carefully back in the Mishnah. If you go back to Kuf Yud Zayin, you remember the Mishnah came up with a scenario in which a Jew shechted a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew, and we are at the point where it's convulsing, but it didn't actually die. So, if we can, let's just break up the timetable over here, right? Immediately post-shechita, so the animal is in convulsion, so it's twitching, but it's not yet dead. Now, when generally speaking, when we're talking about shechita, so when you're shechting a kosher animal by a Jew for another Jew, so what is the point where the animal now becomes mutter? Immediately after shechita. Fine. But we are discussing a really unusual scenario where a Jew is shechting a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew. So there's going to be a point of convulsion. And then moments later, there's going to be convulsion comes to an end. And we're going to arrive at the point of actual death. Now, being that it's a non-kosher animal, so the animal ultimately will become a nevela. However, between the point of shechita and the point of death, so we noted back in the Mishnah, we are going to be in a really rare area in halacha where this animal is on one hand food, subject to tumas ochlin, but on the other hand, not yet a nevela. And when it stops convulsing, so then it's going to become a nevela. Now, admittedly, that's a lot to wrap our heads around, but that's what we saw in the Mishnah. And the Gemara is going to be discussing this now with much greater detail. Hashocha behem amar avasi shonim. So they taught the following. The they, says Rashi, is Tanaim in Eretz Yisrael. So the, or I should say rather, just Tanaim. In other words, the word Shonim over here is just simply an expression that he describes in terms of, this is part of the Masorah that was taught amongst the Tanaim. Yisrael b'temeah v'ovik hachavim b'tahora. If I have a Jew shechting a non-kosher animal, or a non-Jew shechting a kosher animal, tzrichin machshavar b'hechshamayim emakam acher. So it requires machshava and it requires hechshamayim. Meaning we are going to be discussing right now this point of time between Shechita and the end of convulsion. And in this period of time now, the animal is going to, in fact, be at least eligible to be Tumas Ochlin. Tumas Ochlin meaning it's a food, it has a status of food, it's susceptible to Tumas Ochlin if a sheretz were to touch it, and then at the conclusion of convulsion, so then it's going to be a nevela, which means then, of course, that it's going to be a self-generated Tumma. And with that stated, what we learn now in the Mishnah is that if a Jew is shechting a non-kosher animal, or a non-Jew is shechting a kosher animal, we can arrive at this point of Tumas Ochlin between shechting and the end of convulsion, but only if you have machshava. Now, only if you have machshava, why do you need machshava? Rashi over here writes as follows. Now, Rashi says, now go back to what I wrote back in the Mishnah. When we did the Mishnah, we read the Rashi in the Mishnah. They came to the Kavaseh b'shchitas Yisrael b'tahara m'shavi le'uchla b'odim mefarcheses Yisrael sharya da b'shchita taya lehu milsa hashtana mihov Yisrael shachta shchita ma'alya af agav d'petemeh lo shaych shchita. Good. So as we got done saying, but Rashi over here articulates, because the Jew is doing the act of shchita, even though it's a non-kosher animal, and even though it's not shaych to shech the non-kosher animal, but because the Jew is doing the act of shechita, and because for a Jew, shechita is significant, so therefore with the shechita comes now the status of Ochlin. And as far as the guy is concerned, the guy can't eat it until it's actually dead. Because remember, for the guy, shechita is totally meaningless. And so therefore he has to wait until death. Death comes at convulsion, after convulsion. But because the Jew is doing the shechita, as long as his intention is to feed it to the guy, so it's going to be giving the status of food. Now, I know this is really difficult to process, because can the guy eat it at this point in time, immediately after shechita? The answer, of course, is no. For the guy, it's Avram and Achai. And yet, because the Jew is doing the act of shechita, and because the Jew now is thinking about how he's going to feed it to a guy, that machshava is able to give it status of Tumas Ochlin. I know this is a lot to process. It's difficult. But it's difficult, but it's the simple pshat of the Gemara. This is nothing, we're not doing anything other than just saying simple pshat in the Gemara. And it goes without saying, by the way, that if the animal were a kosher animal, then for sure shechita would immediately render that animal Tumas Ochlin. Now it's true, by the way, that we said earlier in our Masechta, we said in Sanhedrin as well, that we too have to wait till the end of convulsion. But that's not Me'ikar Hadin. That's not Min HaTorah. Min HaTorah, you and I are allowed to eat the animal immediately after Shechita. It's just that the Chachamim said, look, the appearances, it doesn't look right. Okay. And the same thing is going to be true when a guy shechs a kosher animal. When a guy shechs a kosher animal, so we're going to have the same effect. Where? What is the status of a shechitas guy? We discussed this just a couple of days ago. Nothing. The guy shechting an animal, it's not a shechita. But yet, because we're talking about a kosher animal, and because the guy shechted it, so once again, it's going to have the status of ochel, until it's actually dead. Tanya, I'm the coming to hold the Torah. He vashkechan heter b'Torah mifarcheses sheshachti Yisrael hashtanami kishachta v'kochavim havia ochel l'tami Tumas Ochlin min asheretz shem tachso v'tiga ba'ochlin acherim kodem shetamus v'tasa nevela titameim. And so again, it's a really unusual halacha, and it really takes a lot to wrap our head around the idea. But when the guy shechs a kosher animal during convulsion, the animal is going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin, Because since there is an idea of shechting a kosher animal, even though the shochin happens to be a non-Jew, so at least the machshava of, hey, a Jew can eat it, so during convulsion it has tumas ochlin. Okay. The Gemara, we're going to end off with one more point of the Gemara. We're going to turn the page and then we'll pick it up tomorrow. So what we learned just now is that if I have a Jew shechting a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew, or if I have a non-Jew shechting a kosher animal for a Jew, so before the actual death and before the animal actually becomes an avela, so there's this period of time during convulsion where the animal itself is going to have the status of ochel and be eligible and susceptible to tumas ochlin. Good. However, what becomes difficult is what they also said, and that it requires hechsher. Now, it requires hechsher, on one hand, we understand, but as we're going to see in just a moment, it's very difficult to understand. Hechsher means that in order for a food to become susceptible to tumah, it's to come into contact with one of the liquids. Now, you do remember earlier in the Masechta, we talked about the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that shechita itself is a machshir. Good. That shechita is Rabbi Shimon. We don't hold like Rabbi Shimon. So in other words, so for the meat of this animal to become even susceptible to tumah, it has to come into contact with a liquid. The Gemara says, so, okay, same thing over here. It has to come into contact with a liquid. So the right, So hechsher lamali. So the Gemara says, okay, on one hand I understand it, but on the other hand, I do not understand it. Why? Hechsher lamali. Sofalatami tumas chamura. Because we're going to introduce ourselves now to a rule regarding hechsher. Right? I'm not sure if we said this earlier in the Masechta, but this rule comes up a number of times throughout Shas, and the rule goes as follows. If anything is going to ultimately become a source of Tumah, it doesn't need Hechsher even prior to that point in time. I'll say it again. Anything which is going to be an Avah Tumah does not require Hechsher even before it becomes an Avah Tumah. Now, if you think about it, it really makes a lot of sense. Because what's Hechsher basically saying? That we have to make this now, this food, eligible, susceptible to becoming Tamei. In just a couple of minutes from now, this is going to be an Avatumah. So if we can easily forecast in the future that it's going to become an Avatumah, so currently right now I need Hechsher so that it can become susceptible to Tumah. In just a couple of minutes, it's going to be a source of Tumah. So this is the rule. Now that we know the rule, so then what's going on over here? I have just shechted an animal that's going to become an avela when it stops convulsing. And we're learning now that that during convulsion, it's tumas ochlin, and it needs hechsher. And the Gemara is now asking the obvious question. Once you know the rule, it's obvious. It doesn't need hechsher. It's going to become an avela. Again, this week's parsha. Oh, it's unbelievable how this week's daf and this week's parsha totally coordinate. Okay. And so seeds which are never going to become an avatama, they require hechsher. But anything that's going to become an avatama do not require hechsher. And we say the same thing regarding nivlasof tahor. The carcass of a kosher bird does not require hechsher. Why? Because it can arrive to the point of tumah chamura. Good. So now, question on the table. So why then does our meat during convulsion need hechsher when ultimately it's going to be a nevela? So the Gemara gives an answer. Well, you know that what we could do is that we can, during convulsion, and admittedly, it's going to be very challenging, but is that what we could do is we could chop up the meat into really, really small pieces, and each piece is going to be less than a kezias. Nevela is only for a piece of meat that is the size of a kezias. And since, at least in theory, that's possible, so we could stop it from becoming tumas nevela, and so therefore, that's why it would require hechsher, because it's inevitability, its destiny is not necessarily going to be a nevela. Okay, and it's a difficult answer. I'm with you, but obviously the question demands an answer.